tone of what we're trying to accomplish today, what we have in store, what we're trying to achieve. Let me start off with a story. The first great modern yeshiva, the yeshiva that generated all the yeshivas, was the Volozhin Yeshiva in 1803. Before the Volozhin Yeshiva in 1803, there were no such things as mega yeshivas where people traveled from all over the world to learn at or learn with. You learned in your local base medrash with your local rav, and then when you outgrew that rav, you moved to another base medrash in another city. So Volozhin is the yeshiva that started everything, 1803. Rav Chaim Volozhin started the Volozhin Yeshiva, the Talmud of the Rav, the Vilna Gaon. Now, he had a peer named Rav Zalman Margolis, someone else who started the yeshiva in that period in Europe, but Rav Zalman Margolis' yeshiva didn't really get anywhere. So one day, Rav Chaim Volozhin is speaking with his friend, his colleague, Rav Zalman Margolis, and he says, how come your yeshiva Volozhin was so wildly successful, and my yeshiva that I opened, I'm a Talmud Chacham as well, didn't gain any traction? So Chaim Volozhin asked his friend, Rav Zalman, well, what did you do on the day you opened your yeshiva? Zalman said, the day we opened our yeshiva, we had a party, we danced, we had a simcha. Rav Chaim Volozhin said, the day we opened Volozhin, we all fasted. And we all davened HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we should have Siyata D'Shmaya, that Hashem should take this project and make it work. No matter how hard human beings toil and invest and build, if Hashem doesn't want it to succeed, it won't succeed. If there's no Siyata D'Shmaya, if there's no secret sauce, it's not getting anywhere. What is the Siyata D'Shmaya in this yeshiva? This is a 52nd year of yeshiva. You guys have seen friends, parents, rebbes. Well, there's a lot, and we'll try to tell you about it. We're not here to toot our own horn. We're here to direct you to certain values. But part of what makes the Siyata D'Shmaya of this yeshiva is not what we learn, and not just who teaches you, but where we are. And how we've been part of this struggle to rebuild our people, return to our land, and it's a struggle. But it's a struggle in which Gush is at the forefront, and in which the yeshiva of Gush is right in the middle of it. The Gemara in Shabbos describes the four questions that every single person has to answer when they get to heaven. Four or five questions. The first question everyone will be asked is, were you honest and ethical? If you're not an honest person, whatever religion you achieve, whatever ritual you perform, it's all rot, it's all decay. First question is honest, ethical, integrity, respectful. Second question is, did you study Torah? If you don't study Torah, we've said this several times, you can't be an Orthodox male Jew if you don't study Torah. It doesn't exist. It's a mitzvah in the Torah. You don't have an excuse that you weren't exposed to it. How much you learn? Do you learn more? Do you learn less? You have to study Torah. That's why you're here this year, to gain the skills and the passion for Torah studies. The third question you'll be asked, did you raise your family? How do you invest your prime years? Just in getting a little something for yourself, or investing in your children, investing in your community? The third question you'll be asked, how much Torah you learned? That's number two. Honesty, ethics, number one. Family, community, number three. Question number four is, Tzipisa L'Yeshua. Did you accept your reality and accept the fallen world you lived in? Or did you dream and wait and anticipate and hope for that utopian world we're supposed to live in? That other world that we've been promised, that other place. As perfect as you make your world and as much as you make peace with this world, it's a mirage. It's an hallucination. It's not where you're meant to live, and it's not the state of affairs the world is meant to be conducted by. We don't run away from this world, but we know there's some other world we're trying to be part of and another land we're trying to live in. Now, for thousands of years, our grandparents read this Gemara and said, okay, I'm waiting. I'm waiting. I'm waiting. I have patience. The world around me is dark. The world around me is bleak. The world around me is crushing. Jews are discriminated against. Jews are being persecuted. But I know there's another world. I know there's a different place. Let's keep our faith. Let's keep our stamina. Let's not cave. With great heroism. But our generation has been chosen not just to wait, but to be. Not just to imagine, but to build. And I don't know why we were chosen, but we were chosen. I remember visiting Chana Henkin, who started the Nishmat School for Women. when she lost her children early in the ninth stabbing intifada that started 3 years ago. And I visited her when she was sitting in Avelis. And a bunch of girls came in from a seminary. And she didn't know them, and they didn't know her. It's very awkward. So she tried to make small talk. And she asked the girls, how many books are there in Tanakh? One of the girls raised her hands and said, 24. She said, I want to correct you. There aren't 24 books. There's a 25th book. And the book describes our return to this land and the struggle to live in this land. And my children are in that book. We're not living through geopolitics. We're not living through headlines and Hamas. These are just the externals. We're living promises delivered by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to our grandparents. And just promise, didn't even promise us a prize at the end of the trail. These were missions that were delivered to our people, to our grandparents, that went dormant for 2,000 years, more or less. Now been reawakened. But just as they struggle, we struggle. And all those promises and all those destinies that we're meant to fulfill, they're not just, we don't just live in a vacuum. Of course, you can live anywhere on this planet and identify with Avraham and Yitzchak and Rivka and Rachel. But they were tethered to a particular land. And within that land, those promises and those challenges and those dreams, we're tethered to a particular area in that land. As important as Tel Aviv is, as important as Haifa is, as important as Ashkelon is, Jewish history, Sefer Bereishis, unfolded in a biblical corridor. A corridor that stretches from Beit Dale in the north where Yaakov dreamed, through, of course, Yerushalayim, where the Akedah occurred, down through Beit Lechem, where Rivka was intentionally buried by the road, Rachel was intentionally buried by the roadside to be on the roadside of history, to daven for us when we were exiled from Yerushalayim, right through where we live, down to Hebron, and ending up in Beersheba. That's a biblical corridor. That's where history unfolded. That's where we've returned to just recently. And obviously, not incidentally, that's the ground zero of the struggle. The world has more or less come to terms with Jews living in Haifa. The world has more or less come to terms with Jews living in Tel Aviv, but they haven't, Shamo Amin Yerbazon, come to terms with us living in Gush Etzion and Beit Lechem and Hebron and Beit El. Because when Jews return to the biblical corridor, history starts again. And that sends shockwaves through humanity and its consciousness. They live in Tel Aviv, live in Haifa. And within that biblical corridor, sadly but triumphantly, the Gush has become inextricably linked, ground zero, literally, for the struggle and the triumph. Whether it was in 1947 and 1948, defending the southern flank of Yerushalayim, and 250 people, as you'll see, who gave their lives in that battle. Whether it was the great, great return in 1967 and the tree and what that tree symbolized, and making phenomenal, phenomenal. Who in the English-speaking Jewish world doesn't know the word Gush? Who doesn't have a relative in Efrat or Daniel or Elazar or Elov Shvert? Has it been taught by a Talmud of this yeshiva or a Rebbe or of Liechtenstein? But when you say the word Gush, you're going to any community anywhere. The word, of course, whether it's a community, whether it's a yeshiva. And then, of course, sadly enough, 5 years ago when the three boys were taken literally 30 seconds walk from where you're sitting right now. Three boys who came to learn in the Gush. Two boys who left in the Gush in Makor Chayim. And somehow this yeshiva has been part of that. Facts on the ground. I was here in 1983. The Gush was maybe a tenth as populated as it. I would look out, I saw a sign, one day a frat will be built here. And I looked at Kfar Tzion and saw a few electric lights. And now, and one day, maybe in 30 years, you'll bring your children back and say, I remember when Efrat and Alon Shvert weren't part of the same city. I was like, come on, Dad, that's ridiculous. Same city, what do you mean? It was pasture land, it was... And you're a part of it. Not a part of it because you're in the army yet. Some of you may well be. You're not a part of it, you're not building. But just coming to learn in this yeshiva and continuing with this legacy and living in this part of the country and being part of this rebuilding and the struggle to rebuild our people... That's on you. You're not just here for Baba Basra. You're not just here for a Perek in Tanakh. If we learned about Hilchos Shcheinim, all of you are learning Hilchos Shcheinim, Let's take the time today to meet our Shrein. Let's meet the people who were our Shrein thousands of years ago and took the struggle on their shoulders. Let's meet the people who struggled in 1947 and gave their lives so that literally this yeshiva could thrive. This yeshiva is built on the blood of martyrs. Let's meet the people who returned in 1967 and waved their hands at that tree for 19 years to come back. And let's continue to meet these people so that the energy that runs through this yeshiva at its core and the historical consciousness and the commitment to rebuilding our land and the success we've had, and success always comes with a price. You can either live on the sidelines of history and not be willing to pay a price, or be on the field of history. Your choice. You want to sideline yourself? Find a quiet mall and a manicured lawn and build your house. If you want to be a builder of history, then you have to enter the plains of history. So these are our plains. This is the field. And let's see all the generations that have struggled to help us reach this point so that we're attuned to our past and we know what the future expects of us. Because one day they'll be talking about you and we're talking about them. And a couple hundred years they'll say, well, who's the first person to come to Gush? First to come to Israel. I said, oh, and then 2019, my great-great-grandfather said he's going to come. And he said he's going to move to Israel and Zion. Don't just think about the past, but think about how you're writing your future. And go see the movie about 1947, 1948. We'll pass by the monument to the three boys who were taken. They'll see the bus stop, say some tale, and it's very brief. We have to get to the movie. Then we'll go to Kibbutz Rachel and Davin. Davin not just for Gula, but Davin for Shani Yom Kippur. And Davin is a thing you want to, when you're in Kibbutz Rachel, try to take a moment and take a snapshot in your mind so that when you're in the middle of davening Rosh Hashanah, you want to go somewhere, and somewhere greater Kavanah, you can all of a sudden invoke that picture. I stood by Kibbutz Rachel. I remember I stood by my grandmother's grave. And then we'll come back and we'll hear a little bit about the tree.
Is it true that they stopped there when they came to establish yeshiva?
The story is as follows, but you'll see the story in the movie. The story is the orphans, whose parents had been executed in 47, 48, were only allowed to come back to the land around Rosh Hashanah time of 1967. So the war was fought in June 67. It took a couple of weeks or months for the zone to become demilitarized and secure. A couple months later, around now, the Chabet Elul, so around 2 weeks from now, 52 years ago, they started their day by going to Har Hazikin and visiting the graves of their massacred parents. This is the story. And they said, we're going home to their parents in their graves. And then they passed through Beit Lachem, they walked through Beit Lachem, and they stood at Kibbutz Rachel, and they read it. Rachel Mavakal Bonel, Me'anali Nachem Bonel. They read the psukim, telling Rachel to stop crying. Can you imagine standing by her grave and saying, Rachel, stop crying. We're here. You don't have to cry anymore. Menikolech Mibechi. Then they came back and they built Barzion. It's an important day. It's an enjoyable field. It's an enjoyable day, but understand where this yeshiva is settled and why we want you to feel that siyata. No doubt that in Shemayim HaKadosh Baruch Hu shines on this yeshiva, because it isn't just a place of Talmud Torah, it is a place of trying to rebuild our people through the energy of Talmud Torah.
Here's the plan. We are going to walk together in the